This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you want to stay up to date and you're away from the radio, you can always stream anytime, anywhere, even listen on demand on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. Go check it out today. Dennis Fuller is producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company is he is each and every Thursday on the program. He writes about college football and college basketball for CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, good day, Jeffrey. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing well. I got to tell the listening audience, I'm very excited because for the media nerds out there, Cobb got access to the basketball database that everybody wants. It's Spectrum Sports. And he texts me last night. He's like, heads up, I got access to Spectrum, and I've been doing stuff about the Tigers. I got notes. I'll tell you what was the worst, Cobb. I had a friend that interned at ESPN one summer, and so he had access to all of the, like, I'm not just talking true media. I'm not just talking Spectrum. I mean, it was like golfstats.com. If it was like a subscription service that you wanted, he had it. Like, we even had like access to like one of the film survey, like one of the film study ones. It was phenomenal. We had that gravy train for about 18 months and then the passwords expired. So spoiler alert, I use Cobb for the football database. I'm about to start arm twisting my buddy here so I can get the basketball database. But I'm very fired up because you said you got a lot of notes.
Well, I do. So we've got to make sure the password sharing situation with Synergy is on the up and up.
Yeah.
I don't want to end up in a situation where my access gets revoked because we're geolocating the account from multiple different places.
Listen, that's just
once.
A risk we're going to have to take.
It's funny, though, whenever I log in on the True Media stuff for college football, it's always like, you must remove one of these devices, and one of them is always, always, always JW's laptop.
Or Booth, producer Booth, or Office. Yeah. I'm a very, very generous and selfless mooch. I never bump your computer off. It's always whichever one I have. I bump that one off.
Well, I appreciate it. So hopefully we can get the Synergy sharing going.
Yeah.
But man, it is a treasure trove.
Oh my gosh.
And for those of us in Memphis or around Memphis who have been trying to figure out, like, what is it about this team that is so hated by the metrics and stuff? I think there's actually some morsels of insight. Also, man, one big takeaway from last night, you don't need an advanced algorithm or a you know, some sort of a computer to tell you this. Man, final scores lie. They lie. If you're just box score scouting, you look at Vanderbilt, Texas A&M last night, and you're like, wow, Texas A&M almost won that game. False. Vanderbilt basically just let them back in it in the final minute. And then if you box score scout Memphis and Rice, you're like, oh, okay, Memphis took care of business. Like, comfortable 12-point win against a bad team. All right, nothing to see here. Boy, it couldn't have been farther from the truth, because for 36 minutes that was a dogfight.
Okay, so we're going to discuss this to begin with. We'll start with the Tigers because we have some notes. I think actually you and I are going to disagree on this, because I thought this is not even a I think my reputation at this point, like, it's not like I'm a sunshine pumper. Like, I just tell y'all, here's what I watched, here's what I felt and reacted in real time, and you can disagree, you can take it. It's not like it's I never have an agenda. I don't have an angle. So
Yeah, right.
I felt differently about last night, but it was a bizarre game, and I definitely want to discuss that with you. Also, we want to discuss the Grizzlies are now going to have 5 games on the calendar that are going to be available statewide, simulcasted on a gray media, I don't know what we'd call it, a portfolio holding. So for us, it's WMC in Nashville. It's the NBC affiliate, and I believe it's the CBS affiliate in Knoxville. So they're going to be available statewide, but I want to talk about bigger picture of what might be happening on that. Eric Hasselstein's going to join us here in about 30 minutes or so. Grizzlies will return to action tomorrow night. Got a back-to-back. Knicks tomorrow night. Then we have the Spurs on Saturday night. That's wrestling night. Then Monday, I believe it's the Hawks. At one point, I actually had the schedule memorized. Yeah, Hawks on Monday, OKC on Wednesday. So kind of an important stretch for the Grizzlies here as they try to, the way that their schedule sets up, they have like a nice little spurt here of about 7 games where they can maybe get ahead of Denver because Denver's got a tougher stretch right now. So we'll discuss the Grizzlies with Eric. We'll get into the list at 3:05. NFL news. Apparently, Cobb, I know you find this hard to believe. It's time to reimagine overtime. Here we go again. It's overtime. Yeah. We got to reimagine overtime. Also, we found out that we will be going to the electronic first downs. We're still going to have the chain crew as a backup. I still need to find out, though, if we're going to get the chain crew to come out and measure. Doesn't seem likely to me, so that's kind of upsetting. Discuss
how about
that.
This? Don't you need, I'm sorry, real quick, don't you need the chain crew, the chain out there just so the players can have a visual of where the first down is?
I think fans need it. It's an underrated play. There's no like there. It's an actual additional play that you get when they, and there's also, there's nothing like the process of watching the official clip the little like disc to like right on the 5-yard line, so that when they do have to go and measure, that's where you put the sticks and then reach and pull, and it's always a fat guy, that reaches and pulls, and that moment of like, I think it's going to be short. That's an extra play. We need that. Like, you have an emotional reaction. So we'll discuss all that during the list. Jason Smith's going to join us during hour number 2. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. All right, here's where I wanted to start before we get to you unloading the clip. Because I think this is true. If you watched the last 4 minutes of last night's Tiger win over Rice, You are indeed correct. The box score lied. However, I know this makes no sense, but in my mind, if you would have just told me, if like say you never put the score bug on the screen and they never panned to the scoreboard to let you know what the score was, I thought if you were just watching the game, Memphis felt like they were about 10 to 12 points better, somewhere in that range. And so I felt like the final score was reflective of what I was watching, because to me, this was not like the Arkansas State game. Like, Memphis came out, they had intensity, like they jumped up on them early, and they played hard the whole night. They didn't throw the basketball around. It wasn't like they were careless. They weren't doing the dumb things that at times have plagued them under Penny Hardaway. They weren't doing any of that. But then you look up with 5-6 minutes to go, and I'm looking at the score. I'm like, how is this close? Because it wasn't like Rice was filling it up from 3. It wasn't like Memphis was just sloppily giving them, like letting them back in the game. The only thing that I can think of is like Rice deserves credit because they seem to have a unique ability to lose just about any game by one possession, because it seems like they just don't quit. Now, where I do kind of meet you halfway, it's like, all right, if you just watch the last 4 minutes, you're like, okay, that was a barrage of things to make the final score look worse. But I felt like from the way that they played, I felt like they were like 12 points better.
Yeah, so what I found, Jeffrey, first off, you shoot 2 of 13 from 3. You're one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country by percentage. You win a game by 12 points. Okay, if you shoot the ball better, you win the game by more points. Simple, right? So the fact that they won the game shooting 2 of 13 from 3. That's impressive. There's not a lot of teams out there who can shoot that poorly and still win. I'll give you two examples. St. John's and Michigan State are two teams
Was it Kansas State, Arizona? Kansas State, I think, went like 1 for 20. No, Kansas State was 0 for from 3, but Arizona was like 1 for 22. Like, they combined to go like 1 for 50. But like that's
college basketball is rough.
Yeah.
College basketball is rough sometimes.
Shooting can be a problem. And then there's Trey Johnson. Trey Johnson, that guy's electric.
Yeah, he's a lottery pick too. He had more points in a game by a Texas freshman than anyone since Kevin Durant last night.
I think
his team still lost.
I think he hit more shots than St. John's and Butler combined to hit last night.
Oh gosh. Yeah. So with Memphis, I found something that I think, well, there's a lot to unpack from this game. Well, let's start here with the PJ Haggerty situation.
All right.
Right. Cause he ends up getting to the free throw line for 9 attempts, 7 of 9 from the stripe. That's more within his norm, but boy, he was frustrated throughout that game. And Penny spoke on it afterwards. And I thought it was interesting kind of what he had to say about, hey, he's just not getting these calls anymore. He said somebody might have called in. Like, somebody from the league might have called in and said, hey, rethink the way we're officiating this guy, which I think is interesting. That he might, does he know that, or is he just speculating that? Because I think it's interesting that he said that, because it's striking when you go and look at the game logs. He is shooting significantly fewer free throws than he has in the past.
Something tells me that someone said something, but this is where I struggle. And you help me out here, because you would know my understanding of the way that officiating works, the way that crews get assigned. In college football, the conferences have officials and they assign those officials. Now, sometimes in non-conference season, when you've got a bunch of games and maybe you don't have as many crews, you're kind of like, I think the SEC used to use the Sun Belt, but like they'd pull up the guys. But there's like an SEC coordinator of officials, but that's for football. In college basketball, there's no such thing as you're an SEC official. Like, you'll see Doug Shals call an Ole Miss game. You'll see Doug Shals call a Memphis game and a Vanderbilt game, like, in the same week. There's not, officials are assigned nationally. And so this is where I struggle with this claim. Do I think coaches at times call in and say, like, or there's some form of communication like, hey, watch this? Yes, I think that happens all the time. In college basketball, though, it's like, what, did somebody call in from, like, let's say, did Rice call in, and is there like a national memo of, like,
yeah,
attention,
right. Yeah, there's not an
attention, PJ Haggerty flops or manipulates calls, watch it. Like, I really struggle on basketball on that one.
Yeah, I don't think there's an AAC basketball officials office. However, here's what I did find. So the officials last night for this Memphis Rice game were Pat Adams, very well known.
Yep.
Jeb Harkness and Will Howard. Never heard of those two. But Pat Adams.
Will Howard's the quarterback at Ohio State.
That's right. It's crazy how quickly he made that.
Yep.
I guess the combine didn't go well for him.
Yep.
Pat Adams had Memphis season opener against Missouri. He had Memphis in the game against Ole Miss. Jeb Harkness had Memphis against Wichita State, against Charlotte, and against Arkansas State. And then Will Howard also had Memphis against UAB and against Missouri. So all three of these officials last night had officiated PJ Haggerty multiple times prior to last night at a point in time when he was getting to the free throw line more regularly. Now, again, he did end up getting there 9 times last night. But I do think what we're seeing is these officials tend to cycle through Memphis and they're getting used to the way that he plays. Maybe there's been an emphasis via somebody calling in or just nationally is what I think it is. When you watch the games, I think there was a midseason powwow among officials about how we're calling too many fouls. And I think that's affecting PJ Haggerty. Now, thankfully it really hasn't affected Memphis a whole lot. They're still winning games, but boy, the body language on PJ Haggerty last night was down. I mean, he ends up with 21 points, but I think these last few weeks have worn on him because he's a guy who makes his living at the line. And there was a sequence last night where he's it wasn't the sequence where he got the tech, but he's complaining to the official about a no call, and probably rightfully so, on the offensive end. But he's kind of the bad body language is there, the jaw body language, if you will, sometimes is there. And then on the other end, he goes for a steal. He doesn't get the steal, and it leads to an easy layup for Rice. And the whole reason that happens is because, you know, he's behind the play. He's kind of struggling with the fact that he's not getting the call. And so, man, this is something that Memphis has got to deal with. But I think
I'll also add this. I think this might be some built-up frustration because I had never seen this stat line. He did not get to the free throw line on Sunday, right? That's when they played. Yeah, they played Sunday at 1 against FAU. I've never seen this. Like, usually, okay, guy doesn't get to the free throw line, whatever. You look and you see, like, well, he shot 13 threes. Like, the Josh Hubbard, if you will. You know what I mean? Like, just a bunch of jump shots. I've never seen 0-for-0 from the free throw line combined with 0-for-0 from 3.
Like, when you're 11-of-17
from
2.
And with 17 shots. So I think there was probably some carryover frustration from that. Your theory, I can get along. I can get down with more. I do think college basketball, we know this is true. The NCAA has rabbit ears, and they are very sensitive to criticism about their product. And I do think you are 100% right. It feels like nationwide, whether it happened at the turn of the calendar year, it does feel like there are fewer fouls being called, because early in the year, some of these games were taking Cobb what felt like, I swear, because you and I were laughing about Silver's idea to try to cut the NBA games down to 40 minutes, and you and I were laughing. It's like, y'all, there's been plenty of college basketball games and NBA games that start at the same time, and the NBA game finished first. Like, these games
were
taking...
Texas A&M is playing. You can book it for 2 hours and 40 minutes, man.
And then you throw in the replay reviews at the end. Like, the games can just take forever. I can get down with... Because we saw this last year in the NBA. I think last year it was more punitive. I think it was the... Silver and the league got embarrassed by the All-Star game. They thought that they were going to play hard, and they didn't. And they said, all right, we're going to start allowing more contact. And if you want to bring it to Ja and the body language with Haggerty and whatnot, I think that's a huge part of it. There's a listener online that has made the point, Ja got hurt before the All-Star game and was out for the season. And that's when they started really allowing more contact, particularly in the paint, and that he's not made that adjustment, and that's led to a lot of frustration. I think the same thing could be held here with Haggerty, where they decide to officiate the game differently, and it's causing frustration.
So the three officials last night, who I mentioned, had all officiated Memphis multiple times each prior to last night. So I went back and looked. In the 2023 NCAA tournament game against FAU, did the three officials in that game, did they have Memphis throughout the season? And the three of them had officiated Memphis a combined one time over the course of that 22-23 season. So what that tells me, it's less likely that when Memphis gets to the NCAA tournament, the officials will have seen P.J. Haggerty before. So will there be that you know, alleged memo or whatever out there about, hey, this is a guy who hunts contact? I don't know, right? I'm sure officials talk to each other. I'm sure they, to a certain extent, scout, right? But the likelihood of them having officials who have seen P.J. Haggerty multiple times is slimmer in the NCAA tournament, which I think will work in Memphis' favor. Because if you get a crew that hadn't seen it before, you're not going to go in with these preconceived notions of, oh, is he hunting a foul? Is he just trying to manufacture contact? I think that could help Memphis a lot.
I think there's also... I want to do this social experiment, because last night, I think partly because the team was getting frustrated with the officiating, the crowd was getting very, very antsy. Like, you know, they were frustrated as well. I want to start doing a social experiment, because I still will, once a week, I'll do my old boss's podcast in the mornings. And it's funny how more times than not, when I have an Ole Miss game on, there's usually no sound. And in the Ole Miss Vanderbilt game, I'm watching it, but I don't have the sound on. Ole Miss fans are sitting there thinking that there were certain calls that impacted the way. I don't even realize this is like a thing until I talked to my old boss earlier this week, and he was saying the fans' reaction to calls. I wonder how much, like, because if I was just sitting and watching the game without the sound, And so I don't have the other context. It's just me watching on a screen. I didn't really feel like, oh, it's a bad whistle or whatnot. But I do feel like the emotion of everyone involved, like, I think that adds to a reaction of how it was. Because watching the game last night, man, I just didn't think it was like a bad whistle. I don't know how you felt.
Yeah, but honestly, if you're not going to get up for the opponent, which why are Memphis fans going to get up for Rice or Tulsa? Hey, get
you
up
gotta,
for the officials.
No, I agree. There is probably an element of, as a fan, you got to make the competition. You got to figure out a way to motivate yourself. I like that take.
Yeah. So the Haggerty thing was interesting to me. Again, he finishes with 21. The officiating of him is going to continue to be an ongoing storyline. The other ongoing storyline that I think is worth monitoring for Memphis is pick and roll defense. And yeah, you can thank my new Synergy subscription for this, Jeffrey, which I may or may not share with you. But
I'm assuming you use your other password, so I'll just go and look up what that one was.
Probably the same password. Yeah, you can also probably log into my bank account too.
I wouldn't do that unless I have like a really bad week in gambling and I don't want Aaliyah to know.
I'll know what happened. Well, yeah. Hey, if better you than me.
Yeah.
So Memphis is up 42-32. First possession of the second half or first minute of the second half. And it's like, all right, this is when you should pull away. This is an inferior team. You got them on your home floor. You know, Gonzaga would pull away, right? The computers love Gonzaga. Why didn't Memphis pull away here? Well, okay, they have a few sloppy possessions here or there, whatever. Rice throws up a couple of prayers. Basketball, it happens, right? But then the one that I thought was so instructive or interesting to dive into on what could be a problem for Memphis moving forward. What happens is, Baraka Okoji's out there, and Dane Danger gets pulled away from the basket because the Powell, the big from Rice, is coming up to set a ball screen. Well, what happens is Okoji and Dane Danger both go after the ball handler, and then nobody rotates over to guard Powell, who's the role guy. Well, they just fire an easy pass into him. He dunks it. Rice ties the game, and the bench goes crazy. So it's like, all right, maybe that's a one-off, right? Maybe one bust in the pick-and-roll defense isn't enough to get concerned about. Tie game, Memphis gets the lead back. But then down the stretch, the exact same thing happened again, where both guys charge the ball handler in the pick-and-roll, and nobody rotates over. And so Powell, again, gets a wide-open dunk in the paint. I mean, is it Trey Draper who's the analyst?
Yes.
On those games, yeah. You know, he pointed out, like, this is just fundamental stuff here. And it's mid-February, and you know, these are atrocious breakdowns in the defense where you got two guys charging the ball handler. And if you do that, somebody else has to rotate over to guard the guy in the paint. And Memphis just got blown up on this twice last night. And, it you know, you go and look at the trends, and it's an issue. And Penny pointed it out last night unprompted. He said, We got to fix our pick and roll defense, man, and I fully agree with him. I was really concerned when I saw those two possessions live, and then you go back and dive into the numbers a little bit, and like, you know, I think that's one of the things holding them back a little bit is their half court defense. No, they're not going to be as good defensively as they were.
They're not as long, and they're not as athletic.
They're not, but Musa Cisse is should be a really, you know, plus defender, and he was out there on one of these times, and I was just kind of blown away by how they got torched on those two. I mean, because Rice tied the game on both those possessions with easy dunks. Like, you cannot give up easy game tying dunks on something as basic as the pick and roll.
Well, and it's honestly, even though Rob Lanier wasn't there last year, like, that's kind of how Rice torched them last year. It was almost like they just watched the same game. Like, all right, we're just going to do this again. But you bring up something that Jason and John kind of have a running bit where John gets mad that Jason's still trying to make Baraka Okoji happen and that Penny's. I mean, if you noticed, Brock played 5 minutes. And I'm pretty sure, didn't he get yanked right after that play you're talking about, the second one?
Very shortly after.
Yeah. I would imagine those two things were related because, like, that's kind of the other thing is because they've had the established pick, like, the established play groups, to use a Taylor Jenkinsism. Like,
play group. I love it.
Like, you're now, I would honestly suspect that was a communication problem. And my guess is that's a Okoji problem.
And if he's not defending well, he's pretty poor offensively. So his minutes, I'm sure, will not be rising anytime soon. That just kind of blew me away. So to give you some other numbers here, What stuck out to me diving into the difference between this Memphis team and the Memphis team 2 years ago with Kendrick Davis is how inefficient Memphis is in transition offensively.
Yeah.
I think with the emergence of Dane Danger and the ability of P.J. Haggerty in the half-court offense from an ISO standpoint, like, this team would really benefit sometimes from just slowing it down. I mean, they are not all that effective in transition. There are very few teams out there who are going to be in the NCAA tournament who score less frequently per possession in transition than Memphis does. Sometimes you just got to slow it down just a little bit.
And I know that's probably something that you're going to touch on here in just a moment. I also think part of their metric problems is offensive efficiency. And, like, we were talking about this because you're using the Gonzaga example. Like, why do the metrics love Gonzaga when their resume... And honestly, wouldn't you agree, eye test says that this Gonzaga team is not Gonzaga that we know and love?
No, I agree. I watch them and I'm not blown away.
Now, I do think part of the problem that I see with Gonzaga is Gonzaga literally views defense as something to do until they get the ball back. Like, they don't stop anyone. They don't stay in front of anyone. I made the joke to you last night. They remind me of the 2016 Ole Miss football team that I covered, where that team could score just about on anyone. But you literally, like, there would go games where the other team wouldn't punt. Like, it was just, the defense was that bad. To me, that's kind of what Gonzaga's offense, to me, is built a lot like Freeze's offenses were at that point, which was when they played mediocre or below teams, they would score at will. But then when they would go up against the big physical teams, like what we saw with St. Mary's, what St. Mary's has done to them, like St. Mary's keeps them in the 60s. And they're like, so it's like an offense that's, we see it with the Dolphins. Honestly, you and I are wondering, is this what we're seeing with the Grizzlies? Like, the offense works against the average and below teams, and it scores at an incredibly high rate. But then,
you could even say Ole Miss football from this past season. I mean, with Furman and Wake Forest and, you know, everybody except Kentucky.
Yeah. And Arkansas. They could have named their number on Arkansas. But this Ole Miss team was... The difference, though, is I thought the defense...
They played defense.
Yeah. That defensive line got after you. Like, they had some animals up front. But, yeah, I mean, to me, like, the team that definitely stands out, last year's Ole Miss team would have been like that, where they could score a lot, but they were just hanging on for dear life on defense. But, like, it seems to me those type teams, metrics like them better, I think simply because the metrics say, well, their ceiling is higher. When in reality, this is kind of the struggle, and Mark's going to, I've been plugging it. I talked to him for like an hour yesterday. So he's got a story coming out Selection Sunday about all the metrics and the way that we use metrics and how it's been used to select teams. The one problem that I have with the metrics is it seems like college basketball is the only sport where we reward somebody for beating the crap out of an inferior team. Mm-hmm. And I, like, in almost every sport we think of, we kind of dismiss what you do against the bad teams.
Yeah, like, actually, to this conversation, if that were a factor in college football, boy, that 76-0 Ole Miss win over Furman would have gone a lot longer on selection day towards making the compelling case for them as a 3-loss team, because if there was a net and a KenPom in the college football selection process, they would have juiced that thing with a beatdown of Wake Forest, with a beatdown of Furman, by crushing MTSU.
Well, to your
point. We don't factor that in college football.
To your point.
Thankfully, we don't.
Did you see Bill Conley's SP Plus final numbers?
Well, Ole Miss was probably, top 10?
Two. They were behind Ohio State. That's
right.
It.
And that, I mean, there's your football equivalent of KenPom, but we just don't put stock in it when we're selecting the teams, man, you know?
No, I'm with you completely. I think the other thing, though, is this was pointed out to me. I've held this opinion for a while. I'm also, it doesn't really bother me, but I think the black jerseys suck.
Really?
I cannot stand them. Number one, I hate when you can't see the numbers on jerseys. They look terrible on TV, Everything about the black jerseys feels very ironed on. Like the Tiger M thing feels like they just took the, like, remember when you used to go to the SEC schools, you'd go down to like the fan shop and they had the iron on jerseys and you'd get your favorite player's number ironed on. That's what that entire jersey feels like to me. It just looks cheap and terrible. I have no idea. Like, I assume somebody was telling me that the penny jerseys, the 1 cent jerseys, whatnot. It's like, fine. Can we get another 1 cent jersey? I'm not even saying it has specifically, like, we have to ditch black. Although I think the problem for me is I cannot think of a bigger point spread between the black jerseys and the blue and white Memphis State jerseys. That's like an FCS game. That's Ole Miss Furman in terms of,
wow,
one jersey looks that good and the other jersey looks that bad.
Well, you know, the good thing about the NIL era is we don't have to roll out new jerseys to try to get kids to come and play for our schools anymore. Because you know what? They're getting paid actual money, so we don't have to pretend like the jerseys are going to be a swing
for them. I'm with you. And also, I want to be very clear. I understand the jerseys are not for me. It's for the kids. I'm just telling you, there's a thousand other ways you could do a black jersey and it looks better than that. That jersey's it's a disaster.
I like the whites.
The whites are clean. My buddy Justin Moore points out, and I'm not defending. When I say the blue jersey, I do not mean the blue one with the black numbers and lettering that you can't see the numbers either. I think it says Tigers up front, whatnot. I'm talking the Memphis State jersey, which also led me to think about this. Let's say the Pac-12 or whatever we're calling it now. Let's say that they actually decide to make a serious offer and try to get Memphis. Can we just go back to Memphis State to join up with everybody else in that conference that's something state?
Fresno State, yeah. San Diego State, Utah, like, State.
It is hilarious, like, when you and I were growing up, how much calling a Memphis State would annoy the fans, and now everyone's collectively like, can we just go back to that? It's better.
It's cool. It's retro now.
Well, it's better.
Not even like, yeah. No,
there's too many U of M's anyway.
You still hear the old hats sometimes, like the 70-plus crowd.
There's nothing. There was. I'm pretty sure my uncle. I'm pretty sure he still calls it Memphis State.
Old habits, man.
But he's like, that's where I graduated from. I can't even remember. I even think my cousin was the first part of the first class that graduated from U of M, and her dad was like, "Do you want me to see if I can get you a Memphis State diploma?"
I did.
Which one's more valuable?
I did enjoy that.
Well, there was always that conscious branding and whatnot. It's like, can we just go back to that? But it was also pointed out to me, they stink in the black jerseys. Like, almost all the bad performances. But, like, I don't know. That was the thing that was aggravating about last night watching it. I didn't think it was an effort problem. I really, they came out ready to go.
You just got to have another gear. I mean, you're up 10 in the first minute.
What if they don't have another gear?
I mean, okay, so I thought it was interesting watching Penny's presser today. He said something to the effect of a 28-game grind, and there are no days off for us like there might be for some other teams, which I took as a tacit acknowledgement that, like, hey, we're just not good enough to go out here and steamroll the opposition like maybe some other teams can do, like Duke can, like Auburn did against Ole Miss last night, which, holy smokes.
We'll talk about them later.
I mean, I think he's kind of acknowledging they can't find that gear. Maybe they don't have that gear.
I don't think they have the offensive firepower.
Yeah, and that's the problem with the metrics, is the metrics don't respect a team that doesn't have that gear. When at the end of the day, you don't have to have that gear to beat Michigan State. You don't have to have it to beat UConn. You don't have to have it to beat Ole Miss.
Clemson.
You don't have to have it.
Missouri.
Yeah, to beat Clemson. I mean, yeah, for sure. So it's like, if you can beat all those teams without it, then why do you need it? I mean, I get it. Auburn and Duke are on another level, like, you know, but we don't need advanced metrics to tell us that. I think anyone could see it.
No, and I mean, where I give Auburn credit also, they play so hard, like every game, like they just bring it. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get into the Grizzlies. Eric Hastein joins us next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. That music means we welcome the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. He, of course, is Eric Hastein. Grizzlies and Knicks tomorrow night. Pregame 6:30 with Jessica Benson. Tip-off with Eric at 7. They'll get right back on Saturday and do it again against the Spurs. 6:30 for pregame, 7 o'clock for the tip-off. Eric, let's go back to Tuesday night. Sure. Is that the most fun game of the year?
Yeah, it's been up there. By the way, thank you. I was listening to you and Cerrito yesterday for the kind words. That was very nice of you guys to say.
I mean every word of it. I told you a thousand times. I was a fan before I was a friend.
I did tell my son, though. I said, yeah, I paid him to say all that.
Yeah, well, that's obvious.
In the car with me.
For sure.
That's kind of the cool part. He's in the car with me. We were going to watch some college baseball up at USA Stadium, and my buddy Jared, who helps coach the Southwest Tennessee. By the way, Southwest Tennessee Community College baseball team is good. They're fun to watch. They got some sticks. So if you want to see some good baseball and check out their schedule, check those guys out. They're grinding. And they got some real talent on that squad. But anyway.
Well, you're giving Cobb and me PTSD. Cobb, would you not agree the worst tournament of the year was always the Millington tournament in February when it would be like 20 degrees?
Oh, yeah.
That was my home field in high school. Yeah. Oh, and then – oh, gosh, Southwest has come a long way. I used to work at Game Day when they played their home games up at Game Day off of Fisher's Field. Boy, they were bad back then, so I'm glad to hear they've kind of turned the corner there.
Yeah, they've turned the corner. Coach Show's done a really good job. My buddy Jared's his first base coach, and he's got a lot of local talent, but also talent from around the country, guys that have gone on. So, yeah, just quick shout to them and the softball team that comes up to DBAT and works, too. They're grinding. I love it. Love to see that. And it's just such a fun time to play baseball. My son's team practices up there at times, and they've done a great job with that facility up there. So, and they're planning on more. So yeah, I don't care where you are in February. It's baseball tournaments in February are just brutal in general. And so I'm actually happy I get to watch a little bit of my son's games this weekend on Saturday. I get to watch first and then watch bracket play on Sunday, and it's not going to be like 37. So,
yep.
That's a good thing. But anyhow, back to the original question. Yeah, it was, at times you were just kind of like, man, what is going on? Like, why can't you get a stop? And you just realized both offenses were just executing. They were moving the ball. They were utilizing their mismatches. Grizzlies would make a mistake here or there. You know, look, I know a lot of people will point to Ja taking as many threes as he did. But, like, if he's open, you have to take it. And I watched the young man shoot in, warm-ups and practice, and I'm like, yeah, that's not a bad shot. I don't, everything technically in terms of by the book, is it exactly? No, but when I'm watching him shoot it, I don't care if your elbow's 90 degrees the wrong way, your fingers aren't in the right spot. If you're making every shot, then by all means, dude, keep doing it. There's no clear cut. It's always the right way. There's no other way to do it, because then Sean Marion never would have had the career he had either shooting the basketball. So I didn't have a problem with that. If they're giving you that, you have to take it. If it's not going in, they're going to keep giving it to you. So they had some moments where it kind of got away from them, but they were able to be that resilient group they are and dig in, and Ja hits the running three. They get the foul, and Grayson Allen thankfully misses one, and then obviously Morant ties the ball game, and you go to overtime, and you're like, all right, what's going to happen now? Did you run out of gas? And they just kept coming. And there's obviously some troubles in Phoenix. Their depth, their size, they're just not quite getting over the hump. They're a discouraged group right now, to be honest with you, around the organization, because they're like, we don't know what the fix is. We don't know what the problem is. Even Bradley Beal's getting good publicity about how hard he's working and how he's willing to accept roles now.
He played great, too, on Tuesday.
Yeah, and now he's been playing great for the last 2-3 weeks since the trade deadline's blown by, and he didn't get moved. So I still think they're dangerous to make a run into that 10 or 9 spot, and then if you get them in a one-game set, you just never know. So we'll see if that comes in. But anyway, it comes down to making plays down the stretch, and you have a rookie step in the corner and just not even hesitate and bury a corner three and continue to just irritate the guys he's guarding. And yeah, he guarded Beal, and Beal had a solid game, but he had to work for those shots. This was not like Brad Beal's wide open and there's no problems. I mean, you saw the foul that Grayson Allen took trying to push away from him just out of sheer frustration. And, he gets called for some of those, and I think sometimes he takes the brunt of that. We don't know you. We know Kevin Durant. If you bump up on him, we're more than likely going to give the benefit of the doubt to the future Hall of Famer with over 30,000 points. I get that. That's the way this league has gone forever. But you know, officials are starting to realize this kid can play physical and he's not really fouling. And then just the confidence he has, you know, we spoke to him after the game and I hate bringing it up because it feels like such a broken record at times. We've mentioned to it before. I said, look, we've talked about it before, but I've got to bring up the way you play and the poise you display and the way you're just like, it's like you're built for this moment and nobody expected that. Like, where does that come from? And he gave a very honest answer. He said, you know, I have confidence in everything I do because of the work I put in, not only on the practice court, but off. This guy is a film junkie. Like, he is watching all the time, talking to the assistant coaches. He is eager to learn. Zach Edey, same way. And so when you're building a culture, you find guys like that. You don't find guys that say, hey, how fast can I get here, or how late can I get here, and how fast can I leave? And we've seen some guys do that, some, you know, in all sports, NFL, even Major League Baseball. Yeah, I'll get my 20 swings and I'm gone. And you know, it doesn't make you better. You hear these stories of NFL quarterbacks that have all the gifts, but they're the last one into film and they're the first one to leave to do various things. And, you know, you're like, yo, dude, this, you only get like 10, 12 years of this. Like, whatever you're going to do aside from, you know, being in the film room, whether that's for these young guys, and I'm going to say it, not being trying to be disrespectful, but like, they love to play video games. If you're wanting to go play video games with your buddies, or you're wanting to go hit the club scene with your boys and, you know, chase the girls, that will all be there down the stretch. You take care of what's in front of you, and then it'll be even more of that. So to see what the way he plays, and then that last pass Ja throws and he dunks it home for two, you're just like, man, what a way to end that. So a lot of fun, big win, because it now puts you in a position where if you can, you know, get a little payback on the Knicks, who started out great last night and then struggled a little bit with Philly. If you win that game and then you got the Wemby-less San Antonio Spurs, who just dropped two in New Orleans, you can go right back to being, you know, 2-1 every three games, basically. You'd be 40-20. So it's a big weekend. It's a big stretch. I know you guys were talking about it when you opened up the program. You know, it's now 8 of 10. It started with 9 of 11. You'd like to think you can win 6 or 7 of those home games, maybe even more. And then on the road, you've got a Dallas team that's struggling a little bit, especially with size. And then you've got a New Orleans team that's just like, all right, when can we get this nightmare over with? Same feeling that, you know, the Grizzlies kind of had last year. So, you know, you take advantage of this because that long road trip after the next 4-game homestand is not an easy one either. Portland's playing better. Their young guys are starting to display some things. Sacramento's fighting for a spot. You know, you go down and take on a Clippers team again, and you play Utah, and you also, you know, I think you finish in Oklahoma City. So you're like, you're going to see some high caliber teams, some non-playoff teams, but non-playoff teams that have young guys, and they get dangerous this time of year. But look, this team, like you said, try to build up some wins right now when Denver's part of the schedule is tough, because those last three games, and we've talked about them, are massive. You start here on a, you know, Thursday at 8:30 on TNT against Minnesota, who could be fighting to stay out of the play-in tournament, could be fighting for a 5th seed, could be fighting for a 4th seed. We don't know. They're right there in that thick. You got to get on a plane, go to Denver, face a Nuggets team that doesn't play on Thursday. They might be trying to overtake you. You better have at least a 2-game lead at that point on them, because if they win that game, they win the season series. And I don't think, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think the division winner automatically takes the upper seed in the way it's done now.
It's all about record now.
Straight head to head, right? Yeah. And so now if they were tied head to head, the next one would be, is one of the two a division winner? And then you would get the edge. But that's not going to be the case because they're only going to play 3 times. And that Denver came here twice. Grizzlies are only going to Denver once. So that is a massive game. And so then you come home and you've got Dallas, and where they will be at that time, you know, who knows? But, you know, you're doing everything you can to, you know, at least have home court advantage for 1 round, maybe 2 if you get the 2 seed, but also to stay out of going on the road, because the difference between 2 and 5 right now is not so much that you can't think in the back of your mind, you better hang on, because 24 games isn't a ton of time, but it's enough time for someone to go, you know, on a 10-2 run out of 12 games. And if you go, you know, 7-5, you just gave up 3 games, and that's pretty quick. And then it's a whole different picture to what's happening.
So it was a month ago tonight that the Grizzlies played that clunker on the road against the Knicks. But coming out of that game, they won four in a row, including a win over Houston, a win at Milwaukee, a couple of blowout victories then against San Antonio and Toronto. Eric, I mean, did you get a sense for the extent to which that poor performance at New York galvanized and sort of motivated the Grizzlies? Because I'm curious if that might be in play a little bit tomorrow night when you get another shot at those guys.
I think anytime they lose, it galvanizes them. They don't like losing, and they're professionals because of it, but they haven't had a three-game losing streak all season. They've had games that have slipped through their fingers, you know, early in the season, obviously figuring out the offense, the two losses to Brooklyn and then the loss to Chicago, kind of head-scratching the lead they blew to the Clippers. But they tend to have those issues with teams that run their starters big minutes, that have good size, that have veteran poise. And look, that Knicks team may be quote-unquote together for the first real run this year with the addition of Bridges. Those guys have all played together at Villanova forever. And you add in a Karl Anthony Towns and who's got size, and you add in, you know, Precious Achiuwa playing. And as I have told people after the game, I saw Knicks announcer Mike Breen just to say goodbye. He's such a, you know, humble guy for the level he's gotten to. And he looks at me, and I had to interrupt him. He's talking to some friends. He's like, give me a second. He introduced me and just give me a sec. And he's like, man, that is the best game the Knicks have played all season, and it's not even close. That was perfect basketball for New York. And I was like, really glad I got a chance to be a part of it. Honestly, Mike, thank you very much. I went from having a perfect dinner with some of our great sponsors the night before to having just a nightmare of a game. And you're just like, I think midway through it, you just realize it ain't your night. It's their night, and you know it, and you see it, and everything's there, and you just have to get past it. So, yeah, I would have a sour taste in my mouth because they got the better of you and did whatever they wanted. Now they're coming to your building. They fly in today. They get, you know, tonight off. You want to make them as uncomfortable as possible. And I'm going for everything that's being said about this team and how they play against the elite level teams. And I don't know that I put the Knicks in that elite level with the Cavs, the Celtics, the Thunder, and maybe even the Nuggets, possibly even the Clippers if they're right. I don't put the Clippers in the elite group, but they've got those vets. They're knocking on that door, though, for sure. You want to prove to everybody that you can beat playoff caliber teams. Higher playoff caliber teams, not teams trying to sneak in, teams that are looking at home court advantage, teams that are looking to lock up a top three seed and even a top four seed. And so that's the opportunity. And you know, with New York and the size of their media market and the coverage that they get, there's going to be a lot of eyes on that game. And go out and play Grizzly basketball. We saw the other night on Tuesday, Grizzly basketball can be really fun to watch. You know, if you're just the casual fan and seeing the ball move and the guys that are on the floor being willing shot takers and aggressive to the rim. And, you know, I heard people go, the defense wasn't there. I said, the defense wasn't going to stop anybody that night. Both teams were just shooting the lights out, and it's going to be who makes a critical mistake at a critical time. And it turned out to be Phoenix with the, you know, the push off and missing a couple of free throws, and the Grizzlies just stayed the course. So I'm really looking forward to tomorrow night. I'm looking forward to Saturday. You know, keeping the homestand going. You got four more games now. You got two on the road and then four more at home. And then that five-game road trip. And after that five-game road trip, man, it is a, you know, get in the starting block and get ready to sprint because we're going to be home before you know it.
Do you think Tuesday could have been a turning point for Jaws' season? Because it felt like in the second half, you know, he has the tough – to me, like, it was a nice kind of microcosm of the year in one game. First half, he's not really making anything. You can tell he's getting really frustrated with calls, whatnot. But in the second half, you know, he just turned it on. We saw what still makes him special. But more importantly, like, I just felt like his energy was up in the second half. And to me, that's kind of the most important thing, because when he kind of has the bounce in his step, like, everyone kind of, everyone seems
they
to feed off
it.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt. We were talking about that in Cleveland when he seemingly was getting a little frustrated. But then you take that Cleveland game, and Cleveland played well, and the Grizzlies were right there. They had three chances to tie the basketball game, and they missed. It happens. And, you know, they gave up too many offensive rebounds. We all understand that. They're a big team. They've got two long, athletic, you know, front court players in Mobley and Allen. And after the game, I know the guys were flustered, but they weren't dejected. And I thought that was good. And some people said, why is that good? You should be dejected anytime you lose. No, because they knew they played well. They knew they held their own against a team that is just boat racing everybody they face. I think they've got 35 double-digit wins, which is unheard of in the NBA. And so seeing him come out, and I saw Ja in particular post-game, and he was in good spirits, you know, wanted the win, but they felt like, okay, we've got something figured out. And when you're a guy at that level, and it happens, I think, with a lot of guys in every sport, you're struggling a little bit. You're not putting up the same type of numbers you put up in the past, or you're not having the same type of success, and you start pressing. And it's no different than anybody. You start going a little harder. You're like, all right, I've got to get this right. I've got to get this right. I'm better than this. I know I'm better than this. And then it's like you're struggling in quicksand. They always say, like, the more you struggle in quicksand, the deeper you sink.
Shout out Gene Hackman today.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's like, yeah. And The Replacements.
Yes.
Great call. Another one of my favorite ones.
The documentary. It's one of my all-time favorites.
That is, by the way. And
oh, yeah.
Kudos, by the way, to Brad in the previous show for mentioning The Firm, because that is one of my all-time favorite movies before I even moved here. And his character of Avery Toller in that is just legendary of what he did. But hopefully, you know, all these reports of some weird doings, it's not going to besmirch put a negative asterisk on what was a phenomenal career of entertaining people. But I think when the game kept going and he was struggling to make threes, but lane, and he got some free throws, and he made a couple of plays defensively, and then found a couple of passes that only he can make, and the crowd reacted. It just looked like the exhale happened and he just hooped. And sometimes that's just what you need. You just need to grab a ball and go hoop. You need to go play. And you need to do it. And, you know, when you're in the NBA, that's not as easy. You can't just go down to your local park and, you know, use basketball as a way to decompress. This is his job. This is his life. And it's how he feeds his family, and obviously feeds them quite well with the success he's had. But it doesn't change the fact that deep inside these players is still a kid that's 9 years old that, you know, loves to play the game of basketball.